So we were really debating whether or not to go at that point, because it seemed like a lot of other brands and larger companies and buyers were not attending anymore. But as a small brand, we had already invested, you know, money into our booth. We had shipped product to California, which for an ice cream is really expensive to do. And it was being warehoused at the Expo Convention Center. So that was a really, I think, pivotal point for everyone, where because Expo West was canceled, it seemed like, you know, the COVID was real, it was here to stay, and it was going to be disrupting day-to-day life.
Hi, it's Josh. Before we get into this episode, I want to encourage everyone to listen to the end, because there is a very sweet treat for our listeners at the end. And make sure to subscribe in your podcast app. And if you like this episode, share it with a friend and leave us a review. Enjoy the episode with Jesse Gardenstein from Fronin.
Breaking news tonight, the coronavirus forcing millions more Americans into virtual lockdown.
Our country wasn't built to be shut down. This is not a country that was built for this. It was not built to be shut down. America will again and soon be open for business. Very soon. A lot sooner than 3 or 4 months.
There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of fear. There's a lot of, you know, wondering if you're risking your life by going to work.
Welcome to the Restarting America podcast, where we talk to business owners and community leaders about how they're responding to and persevering through the coronavirus pandemic. Excited really to talk this week with Jessica Gartenstein. Jessica Gartenstein is the founder of Fronin, a gluten and dairy-free ice cream made with clean and simple ingredients. Fronin is sold in 600 plus retailers throughout the US, including Whole Foods Market in the Midwest, Wegmans, Fresh Thyme, and various health food stores. While Jessica was in college at the University of Chicago, she won the College New Venture Challenge at the Booth School of Business for the idea for Fronin. Jessica has worked at the Booth School of Business as a research assistant and has held marketing roles at firms including Morgan Stanley and independent alternative asset management firm GCM Grosvenor. Thank you, Jesse, for being on the podcast today. And it's fun to see the kind of callback to the University of Chicago, because that's where we met many, many years ago. And it's really exciting to see everything that's kind of happened since then and what's going on now. So maybe you could get started by telling us just a little bit more about yourself and a little bit more about Fronin, so we can have a better kind of context for what's going on and what it is and why we should enjoy it. And then we'll get into your COVID story and everything that's been happening in the last few months.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on. This is so exciting. So as you know, we met at the University of Chicago, and that's where my co-founder and I launched Fronin. I have celiac disease, so while I was studying late nights in the library at school, I was always looking for a treat that didn't upset my stomach, and I was eating a lot of the more indulgent ice creams and the, you know, lighter ice creams that I thought were healthier, but both were making me pretty sick because of the ingredients. So my co-founder and I started actually just smashing up fruit, honey, and coconut cream, which was really exciting. And at the time, I was a senior in college, so I didn't really know, you know, what I was doing. It was just kind of like, oh, this is a fun thing to do. And I had a full-time job offer post-grad. But after we won the pitch contest, we were like, we need to see where this goes. And we got some grant money from UChicago. So we decided to kind of explore doing Fronin as a full-time venture. So that's really where we got started.
Tell me, how did you go from just, you know, eating this food that you were making on your own to deciding to, how did you decide to pitch it?
Yeah, so I was making it a lot over the summer. I was a big kind of light ice cream eater and quickly realized that the ingredients like sugar alcohols and the gums and, you know, the flavorings in them were not agreeing with me at all. And I learned that a lot of other people were having a similar issue. So I went to basically every grocery store I could find, looked in their ice cream aisle, and I saw that every product had just ingredients that were unrecognizable. And we always say if a five-year-old can't draw or pronounce an ingredient, then you won't find it in our products. But prior to Fronin, there really wasn't anything that was as clean and, you know, didn't have, you know, cane sugar and guar gum, xanthan gum, flavorings, and, you know, all of these ingredients that are totally, honestly, unnecessary to be in your product, but they're there. So we thought there was definitely a market opportunity to create something that was just, you know, clean, simple, and recognizable. So our strawberry, literally strawberries, organic honey, cream, banana, and that's it. So there's nothing else in there.
And where were you making this? Like, you, I think of being in college. I don't think of having an industrial kitchen I think of my like kind of crappy kitchen I had in college. I don't know.
Yeah, we made the ice cream in a lot of different strange places. First was just, you know, friends' apartments. Like, we would go and take up their entire kitchen and had a bunch of food processors, and we were blending the fruit, and it was the world's slowest process. Like, I would make maybe 10 pints an hour, and it was terrible. So that's when we realized we really needed to figure out how to scale up the manufacturing process.
Tell me about finding that first location to make Fronin outside of your apartment.
Yeah, so we actually coincidentally found a Booth alumni who had a shared kitchen space in back of the yards. And it was close enough to Hyde Park where I could go there, you know, after class, but also, you know, the space was cheap enough for us to rent out at the time with really no money. So we started working there because it was cheap and convenient. And the guy who ran it was awesome and super nice, and, you know, was familiar with the network from UChicago, and he kind of helped us figure out how to make our products at first. So that was awesome. And then we, you know, quickly learned that that process was way too slow, and we really needed to outsource our manufacturing to a contract manufacturer. So we shortly after we moved into the shared kitchen space started looking for a contract manufacturer to help us kind of get the production to the next level.
How did you, what is the research process look like for that? I mean, you said like in the beginning, you kind of have the connection through Booth, you have like the geographic location. What did you look for in a contract manufacturer?
So at first, understand how to scale our recipes from the tabletop method that we were using to large scale production. So we consulted a bunch of different food scientists to first understand what kind of equipment we would even need to use in order to produce more of our ice cream. And I can't speak a lot about it, but it was totally different than what we were doing and totally different than what we thought. So once we figured this out, we started really evaluating our recipes and their consistencies to see how they would fit in the new kind of machinery that we discovered that we needed to use. And once we nailed down recipes, we started looking for a manufacturer. That was pretty much just professional Googling. We had no idea what we were talking about, what we were looking for. And a lot of the manufacturers we called thought we were absolutely insane because we had honey in our products and bananas and just, you know, uncommon ingredients found in typical ice cream products. So it was definitely a challenge to find a manufacturer that was, one, small enough to help us in the phase we were at with, we were in maybe one grocery store, Hyde Park Produce, which is right near school. And the owner said he would just put it on the shelves for us. Yeah.
Because that's a big win though, to even be on the shelf.
Yeah, no, we were thrilled about it, but definitely needed to have more volume in order to support, you know, a minimum production run of a few thousand pints per flavor. So we looked for the smallest manufacturer we could find, and then somebody local too. And locally there were like three options that fit our needs. So we chose one and then kind of rolled with it, and then recently switched because we've grown out of that production facility. But definitely it was good at first, way too expensive though, because we were producing at such a small scale that the unit economics of it just didn't work out long-term, but we really wanted somebody locally so we could be there to really understand our process and how our products were made.
How did the product change from tabletop to that small manufacturer?
They definitely improved a lot. We were able to, I think, incorporate more air into our products to make them even creamier and fluffier. Whereas on the tabletop, it was weird. They would kind of be icy and the shelf life wasn't as long. So with a new machine, we figured out how to improve the shelf life and improve the texture and flavor. So we definitely were grateful that we didn't wind up, you know, trying to produce in the commercial kitchen that we were at and just buy a larger version of the small machine that we were using, because that was an option we were looking into. And I think that would have been a disaster. So glad that didn't happen.
Got it. So take me through a little bit of the time, like give me some highlights kind of until we get to 2020, and then we'll start talking a little bit about what's happening. So you win the competition at UChicago, you're starting to boost up manufacturing, you're in one grocery store. Like, take us through a little bit of the story to how did we get to here, to 20, what year was this when that was happening and what happened since then?
Yeah. So that was the end of 2017. I just graduated. And my co-founder was graduating in the winter of 2018. So we were both like, do we do this full time? Do we not? And I had a full-time job offer. So I actually deferred my full-time job offer for 6 months just to say like, okay, is this going to be something that we want to do? Is it something we don't want to do? And at that time, it was kind of a race against the clock to find a manufacturing partner, because I knew if we didn't find one that it would just not be a scalable product. So we really focused on finding a manufacturer. And then once we identified one in the summer of 2018, we had our first production run with them. So we finally had good samples to actually send out to grocery stores, which was awesome. So we applied to be in Whole Foods locally in the Chicago area, as well as Mariano's, which is part of Kroger. So we were accepted into both of those stores, but I was so shocked we were accepted 1 year earlier. So our launch was actually in 2019, even though we were accepted in 2018. So the grocery store game definitely does a lot of things ahead of time and has certain category reviews. So if you apply to a store, you know, we're applying to a bunch of stores for 2021 right now. So everything is almost a year ahead, which is crazy to us. So we were accepted into these two amazing supermarkets for a 2019 launch. But in the meantime, we did a lot of different product testing between 2018 and our launch in 2019, including doing the Taste of Chicago in 2018. We did that for 1 day. And it was really, really helpful to get customer feedback on our products, and also just really fun to do a food festival. And then finally 2019 rolled around and we launched into Whole Foods in Illinois and Mariano's and a bunch of other local independent chains. And from there, we hired a broker partner to help us kind of expand our sales force, because we had, we just got a contract with a major distributor to take us into Whole Foods. So now we had access to any grocery store, you know, in the country, as long as they would take our products in. So we really needed some sales help. So between 2019 and 2020, we built out really our sales footprint throughout the Midwest region and into the Mid-Atlantic. We were accepted into Wegmans at the end of 2019. And really just, you know, as we grew and got into more retailers and more regions, hired on additional sales help, really more of an outsourced sales team at the time. We only are two employees right now. It's just me and Eric, but we work with independent contractors who help us with different things. And so now we're in about 600 stores and we're launching on the West Coast next week. So we're really excited for that. And we ship nationwide on our website, which has actually been really interesting since COVID. We've seen a big spike of online orders.
Wow. That's a great, let's talk a little bit about COVID. So, I mean, I think of grocery stores have been so important, and also the foods people eat has shifted a bit. You know, these kind of, I see these stories. I know I've personally bought foods that I haven't bought for a long time, or, you know, different kinds of things, or ordered food online through grocery stores. Personally, as a consumer, tell me about what happened in March for Fronin and for you and for your team and for everything. Give me the kind of wraparound view of what happened to you in March.
Yeah, so we were actually supposed to go to an expo for natural foods companies called Expo West. It would have been our first.
Yeah, that was the first big thing to get canceled.
Yeah, so we were really debating whether or not to go at that point, because it seemed like a lot of other brands and larger companies and buyers were not attending anymore. But as a small brand, we had already invested you know, money into our booth. We had shipped product to California, which for an ice cream is really expensive to do. And it was being warehoused at the Expo Convention Center. So that was a really, I think, pivotal point for everyone where, because Expo West was canceled, it seemed like, you know, the COVID was real, it was here to stay, and it was going to be disrupting day-to-day life. So that was kind of the first shock. And we didn't wind up going, and then the expo was canceled. So that was lucky timing. I had friends who actually went to the convention center, set up their booths, and then the show was canceled as they were there. So that was crazy. And I'm glad we decided not to go ultimately, because we were really close to, you know, deciding to get on the plane or not to get on the plane. It was a hard decision because for the smaller brands, it's such a big investment for us to, you know, attend these shows. And we didn't want to, you know, waste the money that we had already spent to go. But after that, we saw a lot of panic buying. I think that was kind of the catalyst in the series of events of COVID becoming more and more serious. So we didn't go to California. We went to the grocery stores to stock up on essential items. And I guess everybody else was too, because there was nothing left in, you know, the pasta aisle. We were looking for just shelf-stable food. Toilet paper, crazy. And then we saw that a lot of the ice cream was also out of stock. And for a few weeks there, the distributors we work with weren't able to restock non-essential items. So unfortunately, ice cream is not something you need to live, although I would argue you kind of do. But so a lot of the stores went out of stock of our ice cream for a few weeks, but it was pretty quickly resolved. The only kind of weird thing was that we were launching into the rest of the Whole Foods markets in the Midwest region. So we had done well in our Chicago metro store test, and then we're expanded with Whole Foods into six states throughout the Midwest. And we had our launch scheduled right as COVID hit. So it was a little bit delayed. And then we had some meetings with some grocery store buyers as well that were just canceled because nobody was going into the office. And I think there was a lot of confusion in March. So March was a really hectic month.
Were you like, that just seems like a time, there's, it seems like a lot of things to worry about then, you know, I mean, just like, even just like money wise, I think you've invested this stuff in Expo West. You know, your product isn't able to get on the shelves. You're planning for the product to get on even more shelves, that it's not like, like, was there like general like business worry then, or were you, was there this feeling of, we're going to get through this?
I think we were pretty optimistic that we would get through this because we have an open line to our distributor. So we asked them, you know, how long they thought it would take to normalize the new buying patterns in grocery stores. And I think they did a really great job adapting quickly, and so did the grocery stores. But I think our main concern for this year was we're not going to hit our target in terms of how many stores we projected being in, just because a lot of meetings were canceled or delayed, or, you know, the grocery store category managers were really focused on just keeping everything in stock. And they've seen so much growth over the past few months. Just the grocery industry is definitely doing well. And I think, you know, we weren't too worried because we, you know, we're not in the food service side of things where, you know, we sell to hotels or, you know, cruise ships or other kinds of avenues that have been more severely impacted by COVID. So we were not too concerned there, which I think is really, really lucky. So no complaints on that, because we've been able to stay afloat, and we've had, you know, a base of business that keeps us going, and we've been able to expand a little bit since COVID's hit. But it's definitely just a weird environment. I think also in terms of looking at our grocery store data, we always now, when we're looking at things, just remember, you know, this is like when COVID hit, this is, you know, COVID becoming a little bit less severe and how that's really impacting our sales. But we have seen a big boom of e-commerce sales because we do ship direct to consumers. So we've seen a lot more people ordering online instead of going to the grocery stores.
Yeah, tell me about the e-commerce sales, because like one thing you mentioned before is even just shipping ice cream is difficult. So tell me a little bit about what does it mean to do direct to consumer food, kind of you know, I think of maybe. Like there's some things that I see some friends ordering, like RX bar subscriptions or something, you know, that's like, I don't think of a lot of things that people are just buying directly without going to a grocery store or an Amazon or something. So tell me a little bit about what does it mean to set up direct to consumer ice cream, and what does it mean for you?
We were really surprised because we've had a direct-to-consumer platform since the end of 2019. That's when we launched it. We work with a center who picks and packs all of our orders, and then they have a deal with FedEx where FedEx comes to their facility and they pick and pack other ice creams as well as just, you know, other food products. So they have the dry ice and the boxes and everything ready to go. So it was definitely easy for us to adjust. We just had more orders coming through to them, but we had to have inventory for that, which is something we had not predicted before. And then they were also really stressed because we were seeing an increase in sales, and every other food company they were working with saw just a huge increase in sales online. So they had to hire more staff. And, you know, during COVID, that's really tough because everybody's working in close proximity. So there was definitely a lot of concern there. So we wanted to keep our e-commerce going, but also, you know, wanted to make sure we were doing it in a safe way for everyone. So we did, I think we overcame it pretty well, and our shipping center did a really good job, but it was definitely just a nobody planned for it. And we didn't think we would see a big increase in sales because it's an ice cream product, but we learned that a lot of people were wanting to eat ice cream during this time and definitely wanted to eat a lot of ice cream. So I think being a healthier option was really helpful for that.
Wow. Where are you shipping? Like, do you feel like it's like a direct relationship between where the product's available, or how do people find you online?
So a lot of people find us through social media, actually. And a lot of our customers, much like myself, have dietary restrictions. So for some of them, they're on special diets and we're the only compliant ice cream that they can eat. So we've become kind of part of different Facebook communities of those who follow these special diets. And the diets are kind of like the Whole 30 diet or the paleo diet, but a little bit more strict. And the more I learn about these diets, they're absolutely amazing. And honestly, I feel like we should eat like this anyway. There's no processed sugars, you know, just foods that are whole and natural. So we really saw a awareness coming from those Facebook and Instagram communities. And then those people were ordering anyway because we weren't in grocery stores that were near them. So that's kind of how we have been guiding our retail expansion. The majority of our orders were coming from California. So that's how we knew that we really needed to start looking at retailers in California. And a lot of them come from, you know, Florida, California. We've gotten quite a few from Texas, New York. So we're trying to really go to all of those markets in retail because shipping online is really expensive and it melts occasionally. And, you know, when ice cream melts in transit, it comes and it's like soup and it's a mess. So we do not like when that happens. But with COVID, FedEx has been a little bit delayed. And I don't know if you've ordered packages and haven't gotten them for, you know, weeks at a time, but we've been seeing that happen. And when it's ice cream, if it doesn't come, you know, if it comes one day late, it's just going to be soup. So that's been tough.
Do you feel like your customers are forgiving, like during this, like how are people reacting?
Yeah, I think people have been really, really nice because they understand that everything is just crazy and, you know, things are delayed and it's not really, you know, it's nothing that we sent it on time and it just didn't arrive because of FedEx. So we're fortunate for that. But we always reship the ice cream. So we don't want anybody not to have their treats.
So it sounds like, so the retail's expanding, the online is expanding. But what's kind of going on in general, just like with the brand and company? Are you going into more flavors? Like, what does that process look like in terms of, you talked about kind of like starting to get customer feedback, you know, and maybe the Taste of Chicago, where you talked about that experience being really good. Like, where do you get customer feedback? How does that impact what's going on? And what are some plans for the future?
Yeah. So actually, great that you ask. We're looking at doing a rebrand right now. So our packaging, I think it's really cute, but there's a lot going on with it. You know, we have a lot of different claims on it. So we're really talking to our customers who order a lot in our online store to better understand, you know, why they order our products and what attributes they like and how we can improve them just from a, you know, a product standpoint. So slight events to the ice cream itself, just based upon customer feedback. And then the packaging, I think we're seeing it's a little too busy and maybe getting a little bit lost on shelf. So we are trying to make it, I guess, more exciting. What that'll look like, I have no idea because we just started the process last week. So we're kind of in the beginnings of it. But I think that's something we're going to be launching in December. So that's going to be really exciting.
Got it. Let's kind of like take it maybe a little bit back again. What would you tell yourself if you could go back to January of this year of 2020? If you could kind of time travel, you know, you walked out of your house and you were back in January, what would you tell yourself?
I'd probably tell myself to learn how to do marketing for our e-commerce platform, because I think that would have been a really useful skill to have right now. To buy a bunch of face masks, probably. I don't know. That's a tough question. I think it's just such a crazy year. Like, nobody could have predicted what happened. But also probably would have told myself not to go to Expo West or get my booth money back sooner and not ship any ice cream there. But also like just to stay positive, because, you know, things do get better and I'm optimistic that they will soon. And definitely to just kind of plan the year knowing what I know now would have looked a little different. So definitely a tough question.
Who do you know, or maybe that you follow online, or another brand or business leader, or maybe just someone, that a friend or someone, who do you know now that's inspiring you during this time?
Yeah, well, I think there's definitely been a lot of local companies that are you know, giving out free products to healthcare workers. So we've seen that, we've teamed up with some of them, which has been awesome. But in terms of just, you know, companies, there's a lot of companies that have amazing social missions that are giving back. So we were just accepted into an incubator through PepsiCo and Frito-Lay called the Stacy's Rise Project, and it's for women-owned businesses. And we had an introductory call with the other you know, women founders that are going to be in the program, and all of them were amazing, and all of their companies have amazing social missions. One is a coffee company that actually helps support homeless dogs, which was amazing, and right now they're giving back to dog shelters in their area, which was so inspiring. And I just felt like, I don't know, I felt like I was in the presence of people who are doing amazing things right now, so that was awesome. And if anybody's curious about their companies or ways to support them, definitely check out the Stacy's Rise Project. And all of the companies have great social missions and have been, you know, giving out product to healthcare workers right now, donating product to hospitals. We were actually able to donate 20,000 servings of ice cream to a food bank on the south side of Chicago during the pandemic, which has been awesome, because that's really where we got started and we worked with, you know, that community. And UChicago is really not that close, not that far, excuse me, from an area that's a food desert. So it's definitely always great to give back just to the community that we started in. So I would say there's been a lot of really positive things just in terms of what companies are doing during the pandemic. Some of them in our cohort are even making masks for healthcare workers and sewing them by hand and delivering them to hospitals. So we've been really inspired by that.
Do you think that, like, with what's happened with COVID and then also with Black Lives Matter movement, do you think it's more important now to have a social mission? Do you think it's always important to have a social mission? How has that impacted you just as a business leader?
Yeah, I think it's definitely always important. I think that just right now, during the pandemic, we've seen, you know, needs change. Like, we try and source everything sustainably and use, you know, overripe fruit or, you know, ugly fruit that would have been left on the farm. So, and wouldn't be good for retail. There's a lot of food waste in retail. Like, if, you know, fruit looks slightly blemished, it will just not make it to the shelf. Or on the shelf, if it looks blemished and it's only been there one day, they'll throw it out. And I've experienced that through grocery stores when we used to actually just go into the grocery stores and buy all the fruit to make our products. We would get, you know, some of the fruit that was going to be discarded as waste. So that was shocking to see the amount of food waste there is. But I think right now it's more just about, you know, people supporting each other and helping out where it's really necessary. Like, you know, with the economy being difficult and people losing their jobs, just donating more products to food banks and also just, you know, helping healthcare workers stay sane. And I think having a lot of, you know, treats and just sending, you know, ice cream or any kind of food product right now has been great, because just an appreciation for being on the front lines of everything. So I hope companies always have a social mission, but maybe are more flexible in terms of what's going on in the world and, you know, helping where help is immediately needed.
What do you think 5 years from now that you'll look back at this time and reflecting? How do you think you'll think of this time? What do you hope that you'll think about it at least?
Yeah, well, I'm hoping we come out of it stronger and better as a country. And I hope that people are more, you know, just woken up by what's going on in the world. I'm probably honestly going to look back at it with sadness, just in terms of what's going on with COVID and the number of cases we've had in the US. It's definitely very sad to see what's going on. But I guess I'm hoping I'll look back and say that everybody came out of this stronger. And that's just maybe me being really optimistic. But if we could come out of it as stronger, better people, I think that would be great. And then I think, you know, looking back, I want to have us as a company continue, you know, helping healthcare workers, donating ice cream, and just really doing our part or doing everything that we can right now. So I want to look back and be proud of what we do. I'm hoping, you know, this is something we're not going to stop doing, because, you know, COVID has been impacting everything. I think it's something that we're going to just continue doing as a company moving forward.
What's one piece of advice you give to other business owners during this time?
I would definitely say try and do your part to help the community. That would be the number one thing if you can. I know a lot of businesses are really struggling right now, and it's really tough, especially if you're, you know, a restaurant or a shop. We've seen some local Chicago favorites go out of business, which has been sad. But I would say, you know, so many people have amazing companies and amazing products, and whatever happens, I feel like, you know, even if it's not this business for us that succeeds in the end, always just persevering and trying again. And also just, you know, like I said, doing your part to help the community out as much as possible is super important. But I think that we all need to work together to stay afloat, especially, you know, supporting local favorites. So we, instead of ordering online, we always just go into grocery stores now and try and shop at smaller stores too, just to support the community as much as possible. And I think that's been something that's been nice to see. And I think a lot of people are stepping up in the community as well.
Got it. Well, I want to thank you for being on the Restarting America podcast. I want to send everyone to your website. What is your website? EatFronin?
Yep, .com.
EatFronin.com. They should go and they should look and see all of the flavors that you have on there. They should, if you're in Chicago, I'm sure you can find you in many grocery stores and in the Midwest. And it sounds like a good, it's July 31st now. It's a good time to eat ice cream.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on. And anybody who wants a discount code, if they want to order online or wants a coupon to try a pint for free, definitely let us know. Our email address that you can send one to is info@eatfronin.com.
If they listen to the end of the podcast, they deserve some free ice cream, I think. So that sounds good. If they get all the way to the end, we'll tell people, we listen all the way to the end for this one.
Free offer, free ice cream.
Well, thank you so much, Jesse, for doing this. And we wish you a lot of success in bringing happiness and doing good for the world and filling our bellies with good food.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Restarting America podcast. Make sure to subscribe in your podcast app and visit restarting-america.com for more episodes like this one. Restarting America is produced by 97 Switch.